Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
It's not Soul Train. That's for my dad. You'll hear him cracking up probably in a minute. What it do, good people? Good evening. Good afternoon or good morning. There he is. It all just depends on what part of the world you're listening. Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Namaste, Oki, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. We're live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect. That's the letter FX. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. You just heard him chuckling. Some call him the Lion's Historian. Others call him Unc. I simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. What's up, man? I don't know. I was feeling the Soul Train, you know, so I just thought I'd shake you up a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. That was beautiful. You know, my life is a life of almost, okay. And that's at the end of almost, you know, like people I encountered, but I almost got to know them, you know, like Don Cornelius. I met at, it was a lounge, of course, called The Other Place on 75th Street in Chicago on the South Side. And he was on his way. He's talking to the bartender. It was early in the afternoon. Well, It was never too early for me to be in a bar. It was early in the afternoon on a Friday, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was talking to the bartender, a friend of mine. And so I was, like, sitting at that end. So it was like I made myself a part of the conversation. And he was telling the dude, and this is the truth, you know, that he was on his way to California to expand on the program they had in Chicago with Clinton Gent, you know. And, you know, it was the Soul Train in Chicago, but he was going to expand on, he had network coverage, and it was going to be the Soul Train. And wow. He was talking about it, you know, but he was leaving like that following week, man, you know. So, of course, I wouldn't expect him, he's dead now, but I wouldn't have expected him to remember me if I had shown up out there and say, "What's up, Don? You lived out your dream, man." But anyway, you know, just so, you know, whenever, you know, I hear that, or like what you mentioned, you know, when you just said, you know, the Soul Train just made me think of him, man. You know, just one of those, that list of almost. But I'm not going to, you know, go all into that. Instead, you know, I'm not going to, first I want to extend an amends to you, man. I'm really going to, you know, really extend myself, man, to not be so rude with you, you know.
Huh?
And I apologize, man. You know, I know. I was rude Monday, man. And a couple of people got on my case. You know, it's like, man, you cutting your son off. You know? Well, they didn't say your son. They said, "Will, you know, like he's trying to, you know, give a recap." And you're like, "Nah, come on, let's move on." That's what someone actually said to me. So, you know, another person just said, "Man, you need to soften up." So for those of you who tapped on me, you hear me, I'm putting myself on blast, and I'm apologizing, not to my son, but to my co-host, Will Green. So let me step out the way, man, so you can do the due diligence.
All right, well, I accept the apology. But like we do at every show, ladies and gentlemen, just a little due diligence here. I'm sure you're already rustling around after Petey Green says, "Wake up, God, don't get..." you hear that rumbling around? Maybe you're rumbling around already because you know what I'm about to say. So at this time, we'd just like to remind you all to grab a pen and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, or a napkin if you got something. You just want to make sure you got something to write with. Maybe you got some questions. Maybe you got some comments. Who knows? You might even pick up something from our banter from tonight. Maybe something you can use. You know, I don't know. But we want to make sure you don't miss anything, you don't forget anything. So grab something to write with. And you've heard Dad talk many times about the power of writing, so grab something. So we have different ways that you can engage with us. And maybe you have those questions and you're wondering, "Hey, how can I ask these questions to you?" And I'm glad that you're wondering and asking that question. So one way that you can engage with us is you can call in directly. Our number here, hopefully you have that pen and paper handy. Our number here is 516-453-6094. That's again, 516-453-6094. And if you're ready to jump on in with our discussion, press 1 on your keypad. That'll put your number in our queue, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. But maybe you don't want to call in. That's fine. We have our chat room that's open on the Blog Talk Radio site with your free account that you will set up. You can engage with us and chat and ask questions, take notes and things like that in the chat room. And then, of course, there's ye old Facebook, as I like to say. Facebook, we have our event page set up. Most of you probably received an invitation, and you can talk with us directly through the discussion tab there on Facebook. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't get an invitation or any information from our show, send us a message, or you can, you know, comment here on the Blog Talk Radio site, and, you know, give us your information or reach out, and we'll make sure that we get in touch with you and let you know of the next show. So that's your due diligence from your friends here at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show.
I apologize if you could hear the paper rattling in the background, but I was highlighting something I wanted to read from the book written by your sis, my daughter. You know, forget the in-law part, man. She feels more like my daughter than her husband feels like my son sometimes. But the title of the book is Fearless, and I was just highlighting right in the intro what I wanted to read. Hopefully she'll be coming on tonight.
Okay.
And, if she does, right, you know, I'll read from the book, yeah. But anyway, man, so, you know, what's up?
What's up? So, you know, we're continuing our talk on the personal program. Our series, if you will, developing a personal program of healthy well-being. I like how you titled that, because I was just saying personal program. But for those that's not familiar with your own personal program, you know, hopefully our discussion and shows can help you develop your own personal program, the point of developing a healthier well-being. So tonight we're talking about mentoring. Last week we've had shows talking about prayer, nutrition, and reading. And if you didn't have a chance to listen to those shows, we invite you to please go back and listen to our shows. All shows are saved and archived on Blog Talk Radio, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. It's type in the Greenhouse Effects, the letter FX, and you'll find our show saved. So we do, you know, always ask that you go back and listen to those shows and check it out. But most recently, we talked about reading. Which was cool, you know, in this day and age, you know, you talked, Dad, about the value of having a well-rounded vocabulary, you know, is what I'm saying, how I want to be heard. You know, I'm always wondering, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Right.
You know, so.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was a really great discussion. I didn't know if there was anything more you wanted to touch on before we went on to mentoring.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted to give a highlight from Monday's show on reading or not.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know. We didn't talk since Monday because you had mentioned us getting together so we could post the bullet points for Monday's show on the webpage, the Greenhouse Effect. I didn't check the page, so I don't know if you had a chance to do it. So for those who wanted to get the bullet points for Monday, check out the Greenhouse Effect tomorrow, and we'll have it up there. You know, someone else had mentioned having listened to the show Monday. If it was handy, they would have liked the bullet points we covered. So rather than, you know, do all the work, I'm just going to post it. So anybody who wants is going to have to do their part.
and
go to the website, which is also a good way to, you know, to pump up some promotion for the website, you know, and I don't go to it enough. Yeah. Amen. So, you know, there was nothing that I felt needed to be included that wasn't covered Monday. And I know me well enough to know if I start talking about Monday, I wind up talking about Monday for the rest of the show. So, yeah, just leave it alone. And we'll just post the bullet points.
Would you mind if we just...
go ahead.
I know we had to pull it, but and maybe I can post also what you followed up on with our listeners' question at the end of the show, because we said we were going to just touch on it very briefly.
Yeah, well, that wasn't about reading. That had to do with interacting with a significant other. Yeah, go right ahead, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead, throw it on out there rather than us, you know, talking like it's an inside joke. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to make sure, you know, that if we say we're going to follow up with something, you know, that we do it. And sometimes I forget, and following up. So, you know, I appreciate all the listeners out there that's really supporting us. I want to make sure that, you know, that their voices are heard. You know, Dad always jokes about how I'm called a friend. But anyway, so one of our listeners, Kim, asked a question, what about agreement to avoid conflict? And I'm going to just start out a little bit what you had responded to me. You mentioned compromise or settling. And you were talking about conflict that only exists because of a lack of a solution. So did you want to add anything more?
No, you said it. You said everything. You could just read the whole text, you know, but that's it right there. you know, again, you know, the question was asked, but it was in part not directly about reading. It was a comment having to do with one part of, I'm not even sure what motivated the question, but it wasn't about reading. You know, it was about listening. And so if you just want to read the whole text, but I think that's more than an adequate response to the question.
Yeah, I remember that in that moment when the question came in, we were talking about how you remember I mentioned how sometimes we hesitate to say that, you know, like sometimes we don't know, or sometimes we don't want people to expand more, that we just kind of act like we understand what they're saying instead of practicing our communication skills and asking people to expand on what they're saying. And I think that's what you were saying as far as communications and relationships. So, again, the question was, what about agreement to avoid conflict in dealing with relationships, I think, in communication? And you're saying that's either compromise or settling. Either way, there's going to be a loss for the person who does it. Conflict, the air quotes, conflict only exists because of lack of solution. And that's what people don't want to deal with for fear of what might be discovered. So that was it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so now it bleeds into, in essence, what we're talking about tonight. You know, the one of the great struggles I think a lot of people have, and right now I'm speaking more from the context of people who are in some kind of pursuit of help in dealing with addictive behaviors, and the list is long. And the hardest thing to do is to confide in another person about the issues that you know derive from addictive behaviors, because it's so guilt-ridden and it's so difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff or sort the seeds. Everything just kind of, you know, melts into something else, and in the process, the person gets lost in how to then identify, you know, what is the issue and what is the residue from the issue. And all too often, you know, out of, you know, good intentions, but all too often people think the solution to addictive behaviors is to stop doing the addiction, like, you know, but it's not the addiction, it's the behavior, and the addiction is just the symptom. So my stopping drinking only left me in that miserable place of not having an exit, not having a way out of my misery. So, you know, since I wasn't drinking, I had to face, you know, all of my unfinished and unmet issues. Drinking had been the way for me to provide a temporary solution. Not drinking meant I had to face my demons. And the one thing that I learned early on, the hardest thing to do, was to not face it alone. You know, see, the great luxury of facing problems alone is that if I fail, nobody else knows. and if people have been around me long enough, they won't know the difference between attempt and failure anyway, unless I open my big mouth. You know, how many times have you heard somebody say, man, I'm quitting smoking. And then 10 minutes later, they say, man, I ain't smoked in 10 minutes. And then a couple hours later, they say, I ain't smoked in 2 hours. It's like, well, damn, dude, just go ahead and smoke. You're driving me crazy. You know, so yeah, if it's not a, you know, if it's not a shared problem, it's a singular event and therefore has no additional failure or guilt attached to it or shame. But once that avenue of dialogue is open, the first thing that happens, and this is why I really believe most people initially resist it, is truth comes out of the other person's mouth. And it's real hard to continue to engage in any addictive behavior once truth has entered into the picture. You know, then comes, you know, that great demon called denial. But now I'm denying the truth. Now I'm no longer denying the event. Now I'm denying the truth behind the event. And if it's a situation of drinking, getting high, eating, dysfunctional relationships, it doesn't matter. There is nothing I can do about that addictive behavior that is going to make the truth go away. The truth does not have an expiration date, and truth always blows a high, you know, or always blows an attempt to feel better about one's misery, you know. So I think the biggest reason, you know, why dialogue with another is avoided, because I don't want to hear, you know, the consequences said back to me about my behavior. So that question is a good example of that. It's like, well, I'd rather stay in a relationship where the pain is familiar than start a new relationship and have to risk new pain. And people convince, you know, we convince ourselves that familiar pain is more of a fair compromise or a decent settling. Just take it. Just roll with the punches, go with the flow, whatever it is we want to disguise the behavior. Let's just go with that which I know, rather than have to do something different. You know, so hopefully that covers the question and also provides a lead-in to tonight. So anything you want to throw out there, man, in addition?
No, like I said, for those that missed the show, please go back and check out the show from Monday. But I'm ready to dive right in our discussion in Mentor, because it's, you know, out of the seven items that we are introducing to our audience here with our personal program with Mentor, I'd say that's like my, I don't know how would I put it, the one I struggle with the most, the least accomplished, you know, I'm not sure how to put it. Let's just say I've struggled with it. I've never really taken the time to search for a mentor, really understood the value of a mentor until later, you know, until I've gotten a little older. If I had a better idea on that value, like if I went out, like when I was in Atlanta, you know, maybe my life would have been different. I don't know. You know, and you and I have had
most people don't know what you mean when you say when you were in Atlanta. You're going to have to give some background information.
Oh, there was a time when I lived in Atlanta from 1993 to right after 9/11, and I moved back to Chicago in like early 2002. So from 93 to 2002, I lived in Atlanta. I attended Clark Atlanta University. This was after I attended Illinois State University and South Suburban College and got my associates and whatnot. And I ended up, you know, going down there to finish school and ended up living down there and having a nice career in the airline industry. And, you know, things were going well with myself. And I was happy with the accomplishments I made. But in that time, you know, Dad and I joke around, you know, that's when, for those that know me as Will, you know, that's where my persona of Will came about, because growing up, my family knew me as Little Bill. And so I know there's a lot of family that listen. I'm either Billy or Little Bill, you know, I was Junior, you know, I was Bill's son, you know, and growing up, from then and moving to Atlanta, and, I really got a chance to learn some things about myself, kind of like the beginning of learning about yourself, because we never stop learning about ourselves. But in this time of living in Atlanta, I got to know more about myself. And so I don't know. I hope that's enough information. But I think that during that time, if I understood more the value of what it meant to have a mentor, you know, I don't know. Who knows? Things might have been different, or things might not have been different. But then, you know, I think the question comes in the, you know, what do you want to do? You know, like, why would you need a mentor? You know, I know with the things that you wanted to touch on tonight, that like the value of having a mentor or sponsor. We'll talk about that. We're talking about lifestyle changes. But when I was first introduced to what a mentor is, you know, it was, to me, it just seemed like about career choices, you know, education. And I thought that was it. And I didn't realize until later, as I've gotten older, really after I left Atlanta and came back to Chicago, that there are mentors that are important in other aspects of our lives besides just like careers, you know, personally, spiritually, or like you said, that making lifestyle changes and things like that. So I kind of threw that tag on you, which was unfair to be a mentor. We've talked about how, you know, you couldn't be, you can't be my mentor. You know, and I just kind of volunteered you for that, but it doesn't quite work like that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, again, trying to keep it as seamless as possible. There's certain life requires certain dynamics that are, you know, consequential to choices. So there was a time when you belonged to this program called Upward Bound, mm-hmm. and you had mentors in that, and it wasn't just about career and job choice, you know, it was also about lifestyle, and it was about manhood, you know, and I enjoyed hearing you engage me in those conversations, especially since I hadn't been an active part of your life when you were growing up from like, what, about 2 until you were about 10 or 11. So hearing that you had other types of male influences in your life as a teenager, even though I had re-entered your life, still I felt that was a good support dynamic that you had made, that had been made available to you. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it served you well as far as how I observed how you have through life dealt with people. But then comes, herein lies the rub. Life doesn't leave us at one station. We get older. And as we get older, life's demands become a little bit more extreme. And a lot of times, all too often, adults are too embarrassed to get a mentor, to pursue what it would take to get a mentor, to even consider what kind of person an adult would want to have in one's life that an adult could talk to another adult about. When we're bottomed out, when we're in a state of hopelessness, when we're desperate for solutions, yeah, you know. But when we're operating out of the context of having an idea of what's expected of me in life, but I keep hitting a brick wall in some aspects, like let's say a relationship. You know, now the adult in me is recognizing the frustrations of not having the satisfaction of a healthy relationship, but that same adult in me is too embarrassed to talk to or to pursue or to seek out another adult. You know, and it shouldn't have to be but all too often it is, but it shouldn't have to be a shame-based event. It's, to me, it should be, of course, it's easy for me to say right now. Well, but no, even when I was at the, when I had finished rehab and was re-engaging life, I found that the more open and the more honest I was about my struggles, the more open and the more honest those I talked to were about what might help me. You know, so it wasn't like, it isn't like a person has to be null and void completely, you know, down and out without resources and out of desperation seek help. No, it's just all too often it's just one area, you know, in one person's life that might not be going too well. Well, other areas look fine, but that one area, see, that's the drain. That's the silent killer. You know, whether that you said it earlier, whether that silent killer is spiritual, financial, you know, emotional, psychological, medical, you know, oh, it's killing whatever that wherever that drain is. And for an adult, it's a very difficult thing, you know, to if it's a regular part of a person's lifestyle, like active member of a church, let's just use that as an example, a mosque, you know, a temple, active member of it, you know, that even makes it harder sometimes. Now I have these problems, but, you know, all too often the mystique, the persona of the church, I'm not saying the fakery, you know, that's a judgment call, but the persona of the church all too often seems to reflect the idea that everybody here is saved. Everybody here is fine. Everybody here is healed. You know, but church ain't for the saint. Church is for the sinner. And what's a sinner? Well, you know, now a person has to do their own investigation. You know, I found one definition, and I'll be paraphrasing to say it, but it's in James. I think it's James 4:11 or 4:17 around there somewhere. I don't have my book in front of me. But it says anybody who knows to do right, but they do wrong, for them, that's a sinner. You know, so it's like when you know what you're supposed to do, you know, and you still choose not to do it, then that's a sin for you. It's not a judgment call. That's an area of one's own life that is causing its own consequences. It took me a while to realize, but God doesn't punish me for my wrongdoings. My wrongdoings is my punishment. You know, it's like my God, you know, is a healing God. It's a God of love. So it's like, you know, dude, it's just saying, man, when you get tired of living your misery, I'm right here to help. But you got to have, and this is what we talked about last week, you got to have a familiarity of the dialogue in order to have a favorable outcome of the relationship. You know, and this is the same way I believe it works with one human with another human. You know, the ability or the willingness, not even the ability, because we all have the ability to ask for help, but it's the willingness to, you know, humble myself. All too often, though, people think it's humiliation. Well, that's pride and that's ego getting in the way. You know, you don't have to be humiliated to become humble. You know, and so the matter is all in my own definition of me, being able to humble myself enough to accept the fact that I can't fix this alone, and the source of my misery is not going to help me either. A lot of people make that mistake, thinking if the other person cleans up their act, then we'll be fine. Well, herein lies another rub. If you're with the person and they're making you miserable, there's a reason why you're with the person. So where's the guarantee that, you know, once they do your idea of what they're supposed to do, that that's going to make you feel better? If all of a sudden they feel better about themselves and they take a look at you and say, when you going to do your work? You know, because, see, when a person is in a dysfunctional relationship, it's not a singular event. You know, the residue affects the so-called healthy person as well. It beats you down. It drains you. You know, me and Father Clemens, Father George Clemens, he's dead now. He used to be the pastor of Holy Angels on the South Side. And he had this movement in his church called Hate the Addiction, Love the Addict. And I used to tell him, you know, Father Clemens, you cannot love the addict. You know, and I hear what you're saying about hate the addiction, but you got to understand when a person becomes an addict, they are no longer the person we know. They become completely ruled by addictive behavior. And there's nothing loving about that. We keep holding out, waiting for the other person to return. And while we're waiting for the other person to return, this addict is kicking our ass. But we have it within ourselves. Oh, I got to stay. I got to stay. I got to stay. You know, well, this addictive behavior is causing me to have a codependent addictive behavior. Well, the only way we can stay together is by one person overreacting to the other person's misery until the other person's misery becomes the healthy person's misery as well. That's what happens in a dysfunctional relationship. You know, so when it was supposed to be love, it becomes this strange experience of, this is not what I signed up for, but the person I love is still represented by this strange behavior and I'm wanting the person I love to return, and I'm willing to gamble if I wait long enough, they will. No, it rarely, if ever, happens that way. You know, once addictive behavior sets in, that is what the person's truth is until they decide. Not you, not me, not anybody else, until they decide they've had enough. We can do everything. We can, you know, tough love and all that. But, you know, it is. You can't out-deny a person in denial, no matter how hard you try. So the older we get, the harder it is for so many to actively pursue the idea of help, if it means having to humble myself, you know. And I, you know, and yeah, I understand how, believe me, I do, through my own life experience, how difficult, how it feels so humiliating, you know, to have to do that. And I know it happens to a lot of people in church, you know, they have to go to the pastor or one of the associate pastors or however the pecking order of a particular spiritual gathering or religious gathering like that is, when, you know, everybody is singing praises to the Lord and amen, hallelujah, and then having to posture myself before the pastor and say, man, you know, whatever it is, you know, this has just wore me down to a nub and I need help, you know. And now, you know, comes that great moment of truth. You know, am I going to be able to hear what I'm being told, or am I going to think whatever I'm being told may provide me just enough ammunition to be able to sidestep the misery of my behavior but still be able to engage it? Happens all the time. So a mentor, just as definition, as a definition, not the definition, think of a mentor as an experienced and trusted advisor. So there's two parts, experienced and trusted. You know, not experienced or trusted, or not trusted or experienced. No, experienced and trusted advisor, a guide, you know, a confidant, a counselor, a therapist, a spiritual leader. You know, it takes on, you know, whatever form of definition it needs to, based on how you're living or how I'm living or how we're living our own lives. You know, and that in itself usually is more than enough to at least give a person the idea of, okay, let me take a look around how I'm living my life. You know, what's missing in my life? You know, take a look at what's there, but take a look at what's missing, because the whole is where the problem is. I'll tell a story about that later. So if I'm, let's say, again, if I'm not going to church, I may not see that I'm not going to church as a problem. Fine. But based on how I was raised, where church was an active part of my life at one time, is that something I need to, and I'm just using the word church, it could be any form of religious or spiritual upheaval or satisfaction that a person, you know, has at one time or another been introduced to. Is this the hole in my life, you know, that I need to fill? And with purposeful intentions, going there with purposeful intentions, seeking out an experienced and trusted advisor. You know, so that's just one example of it. Sometimes people's jobs have what they call HR, what is that, human resources, I think. You know, and sometimes human resources provides some form of counseling. But is that my job? Now I'm going to have to risk that, you know, there's a true element of confidentiality that I'm going to have to risk talking in human resources about my problems at home, and it'll stay between me and the human resource person or the counselor that I'm assigned to. I had the experience in the job I had in Austin, you know, where I took my issues I had with the clinical director of the program and shared it in human resources. And by God, the clinical director called me in her office the next day and said, hey, I hear you were in human resources complaining about me. You know, now what do you do? You know, my dream job became a nightmare that I was only able to hold on to for for 3 years, and you probably never heard that story before. You know, so these are the risks. You know, these are the risks that we take. But the question is it worth it? And the point is identifying not what I have, but what I'm missing, and maybe that's where I need to pursue to find the first step towards filling the hole. You wanted to say something, man? You know, I'm just slapping my jibs right now.
No. I know that you had invited a guest to stop by tonight. I believe they are in the queue.
No, I didn't invite a guest. I already said who it was. Yeah. So, and she got a hand up. Yeah, so let's bring her in, man. Absolutely.
All right. Welcome to the Green Aspect Radio Show. How you doing tonight?
What's up, Kale?
Good evening, family.
Good evening.
How you doing?
So excited to be a part of the Greenhouse Effect. Oh my goodness,
yeah.
I feel
so special.
Thank you
so much for blessing us. We're the ones who feel special. Before we get into who you are, I just want to read something, if I may, right quick. In the same year, I almost died on two separate occasions within a span of 2 months. The first time, I almost drowned, and the second time, I almost choked to death. I was only 14 years old, but I was fearless. I was fearless before May of 1994. Something invisible happened in May when I almost drowned. A seed of fear planted itself deep down in my heart. From that moment on, in the back of my mind, I knew I would never embrace water the way I had as a child. It didn't seem like such a fun playground anymore. Then, everything was fine until June. I was alone in the kitchen, fixing my plate, excited about a meal, and glad to be with family. I sat down and began to eat, and just like that, I was choking. I was choking, and no one was in there to help me. My God. It was the scariest moment of the last 30 days of my life, because drowning had been the scariest, so I thought. I said to myself, there is no one here, and I'm going to die in this kitchen alone at 14 years old. I don't know how I knew to do it. I don't know if angels helped me do it, but I jumped up after a while and began to throw my abdomen against the edge of a table. I was trying to do everything I could to get this food out of my throat. After doing that for a while, it came up. I was shaking. I was afraid. I was sweating. And that invisible, powerful force happened again. Fear. So tonight we have the author of this incredible book, Fearless, Your Journey to Renewing Your Mind, Transforming Your Thinking, and Reestablishing Your Image, written by my loving daughter, in-law, Kelly Yolanda Robertson. Welcome to the show, Kel.
Thank you, Dad. Oh, my goodness. You read that.
Hear the applause in the background.
Yes. I love it. I mean, you took me right back.
Amen.
Right back to a very, very scary year of my life. But the funny thing is, listening to you read that, I don't feel the way I used to feel when I think about that. Mm-hmm.
Amen. So if we may,
the book itself.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
So which is a testament to the book itself, because
amen,
that's the only way I would have ever been able to write about it, is to have a different feeling about that experience, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. So the motivation was through a personal experience to write the book. Was that something
that you felt?
Was it something you felt for a while, or was it something that just happened like recently to sit? Because it seemed like you wrote it pretty fast.
Dad, Will, if I told y'all how this book came about, I don't even know if you would believe it.
That's what we want to hear.
I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. So I wrote a book when COVID happened, and there was a book about family, and I wrote it, I got it edited professionally, and when I got the book back, I put it on my bookshelf in my closet because I was too afraid. I had put all of this work and time and effort into it, and I was too afraid to publish it now that everything was done. I went back and I read it, and I said to myself, nobody is going to want to read this. Nobody is going to care. I'm not publishing this book. And I put it on my shelf, and this was in 2020. Wow. Well, fast forward of 2021, I happened to go to a Christian conference that I went to with Brandon, and I just wanted to go and accompany him just to get away. But at that
Brandon's your husband, right?
Yes, your son.
Yeah.
Yes. So at this conference, I had a very personal encounter with God, a very, very personal encounter. The way the conference was set up, they had a night of prayer. It was like 5 hours. And I remember walking into this room feeling like I had nothing to say to God. And I was like, what am I supposed to do in this room for 5 hours? And I remember that night talking to God, and he said to me, I'm going to show you 3 miracles before you leave here tonight. And I was like, really?
Mm.
Like, yeah. Mm. And so I had my journal with me.
Wow.
And I wrote these 3 things down.
Wow.
I'm not going to tell them to you. They were very personal. But by the end of the night, he had, in fact, shown me 3 miracles that took place in my own, within my own self. He kind of took me on a journey for the entire weekend. And then the second night, one of the ministers that was there, she actually taught on fear. And I didn't really realize that fear was something that held me back in a lot of areas until this entire weekend. And I remember the lady saying, I want you to go back to where you first remember being afraid. And this is when God reminded me of this experience that I had when I was 14, because before then I was not afraid of a single thing. And she had us do this exercise where we literally trusted God to grab us by the hand and walk us out of the starting point of where we first became afraid. It was like this release, this freedom from the thing that had kept you bound for all of these years. And so while she's talking, I'm listening to God just kind of unravel my entire life to me and areas where I self-sabotage myself or self-sabotage opportunities just because I was afraid to maybe of the responsibility, afraid of the weight, afraid of the exposure for whatever reason. And I sat there just like, wow. And that was a weekend in October of 2021. It was a Friday and a Saturday and a Sunday. And when I got home on Monday, I sat down at my desk in my office. And Monday through Friday, I worked on that book, Fearless. And then the following Monday through Friday, I worked on that book in that office for 8 hours a day. And the book was done in 10 business days. Just like that. There was never a dream to write this book. There was never a desire to write this book. It absolutely came out of nowhere. It came from a freedom that I experienced at that conference.
Amen.
And I think God did it for me because there was no way I would ever publish anything until I published it. You know, I think it was
your first one
that I really had to have.
Yeah.
Yep, and it was a good first book because nothing could follow, because I'm certain that I would have sabotaged my own success for whatever fears I had that kept me from writing, from allowing people to judge my writing, you know, from making myself immortal to the world. On paper.
I know.
I think God just had to have me do this so that I can get past it and do what my heart really desires to do. So I am so grateful for it, though.
You know, without hearing the background, I'm hoping you can understand why I thought you just did it, you know, like overnight, you know, because I didn't know any of this. You know, I didn't know any of it. It just one day we were talking about another book idea you had, and I was talking about mine, and you were sharing your input about why you didn't want to do a review on mine, which I'm so glad you went on and did. Yeah, then all of a sudden it was like, metaphorically speaking, the next day I'm looking on Facebook and I'm reading the announcement of Fearless. It's like, you know, dang. So it had an incubation period, though, to where you put it on the shelf, where you thought nobody would want to read it, where you were concerned about that feeling, I'm assuming, that feeling of failure. And it took divine intervention, I'm asking. It took divine intervention for you to decide it's time to pull it down off the shelf and get busy.
No, Dad, no, no. The book that I put on the shelf is still on the shelf.
Wow.
This is something was birthed out of that weekend. It has nothing to do with the first project that you and I talked about.
Totally
that
missed
project,
it. Wow.
That project is still sitting there nice and edited, waiting to be published. I think I needed to do this first so that I could be brave enough to publish something. But
and what's the title of this book?
Oh, I'm sorry. The name of the book is Fearless.
Ah.
Yes, I had no idea. I had the concept of the book is this. You know, you read the tagline, Your Journey to Renewing Your Mind, Transforming Your Thinking, and Reestablishing Your Image. What I learned from that weekend in October, just in all of that conversation, talking with God and listening to different people, just, you know, pour into us. Fear is a way of thinking. It is such a mental thing. While it does, it absolutely has spiritual roots. But if we can't transform the way we think, fear will keep us from accomplishing so much in life. And I think God was like, listen, you know, what people may or may not know is that that same month in October, Brandon decided that we were going to start. I never wanted to start a church. I said, I can't do it. I don't want to get in front of people. I don't want to pray in front of people. I don't want that responsibility. Why can't we just love people and tell them about God? Why do we have to have a church? I was so scared to do it. I just found myself reaching a different stage in my life, and I think God had to just grab me by my shoulders and say, look, you got to get rid of this because there's so much that lies on the other side of it that I need you to do. And so out of nowhere, it's like he flipped me upside down and shook out all of that stuff from my past, walked me through it so I can see how it had crippled me all of these years. And then out came the book, and then he was like, now you can publish your second book, and now you can help your husband to pastor this church. And things that you do from this point on, fear will not be allowed to hinder you from moving forward and progressing. So that book will be published in January of next year, the very first book that we talked about. Yep.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Wow.
So he is a special, special baby that just was birthed out of nowhere. Seriously. I'm still pinching myself because I can't believe it happened.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. And you probably will be pinching yourself for quite a while, just if for no other reason. Again, I'm projecting all over you, just from the notoriety, the success, the recognition that is really coming from this book. I mean, I'm hoping, I'm guessing, I'm believing that it's come pretty close to reaching your wildest expectations, if it hasn't already surpassed it.
Oh, it has surpassed my expectations,
right,
for sure.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
For sure. Did you finish reading it, Dad, or are you still reading it?
Yeah, because this isn't, I'm not, and I've confessed this on previous shows, I'm not a reader for reading's sake or entertainment. I'm more of a researcher. So mm-hmm. I tend to not read a book from cover to cover. I tend to go through it, parts of it. I might start at the end, whatever. But this book strikes me as not the kind of book that I would read from cover to cover, because there's too much about it that applies at any given moment.
Absolutely.
There's a part you have, I don't know if you heard the show at the beginning or not, but we were talking about it, Will and I, at the beginning. And there's a chapter right here called Don't Fear Shame. And I was just talking about how shame all too often tends to cause people to hesitate to reach out to a prospective mentor to deal with whatever life's blockages might be. And all too often shame, you know, is like, I use the example of church, where, you know, an avid churchgoer is too ashamed to go talk to the pastor, you know, because the idea is that, you know, everybody here, we're all fixed, you know,
right.
we're saved, you know, we are good, you know, so, but then I, you know, so that's why to me, this is more of a workbook, you know, than an entertainment book, you know, in that, and I know you have parts that come with the book, right? If you want to talk a little bit about that.
You're absolutely right. You're right about your perspective. This is not a page by page book, because some things in this book people may not have even dealt with yet or faced yet that may come up later in life, you know. So it is one that you can look through the titles and locate yourself. Oh, you can locate yourself.
I love
that's
that.
For sure. You know, and kind of deal with your past and deal with whatever fears you do face, but it's definitely not one that you hurry up and read or one that you read cover to cover in the book. So the book is designed to build your faith to the truth that God does not want you to live a life in fear at all by any means. There are over 300 scriptures in the Bible where God literally commands us to not be afraid. So in the book, some of those scriptures are highlighted for whatever the fear may be. And the second part that I wrote separate from the book, it is a journal. It's not even a daily journal, but it's your process. You know, it's you doing the work to get to the root. I had to get to the root. I had to go all the way back to when I was 14 years old. Everybody has a starting point. And if you don't address that part, it's like masking an injury, and it will always continue to come back and haunt you. So the journal is designed to help people uncover the root, but the scriptures that are in the journal change the way you think. The book builds your faith to let you believe that you can live a life without fear, but the journal changes the way you think about why you approach things. For example, some people take road trips not because they enjoy the road, but they take road trips because they're afraid to fly.
Ah, I know somebody
you
like that.
I mean? Yeah, you see what I mean? Like, but the way they approach life is from a fear perspective, and it's masked in, oh, I just enjoy the road. No, you're afraid to get in a plane, so you drive everywhere. When you really want to get to the place in life where if you're going to drive 16 hours, it's because that's really what you desire to do and not because you're afraid to do something else. So the journal is designed to change the springboard in which decisions are made in your life so that, A, you make better decisions and more effective decisions, and you end up where God wants you to be in the long run versus the scenic route.
Versus the
scene. You understand what I'm saying, Dad? You're
right. I
you
do.
See
absolutely.
It. All puns intended. All puns intended.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I think also the journal would help one to discern if, in fact, they actually do like driving more than flying. you know. But, you know, I don't think it can, I think it can be an either or both and proposition. But the idea is, what I love is having a journal to help you, to help one, you know, to go deeper or to extract internally what, in this case, the book Fearless is helping me to touch, you know. And
right.
Of course, I'm one who totally believes that writing is therapeutic anyway. So the idea of journaling is like a person writing out their own prescription. But, you know, that's just, you know, just my take on it. We're kind of past the bewitching hour. So I want to ask you, before I do that, though, I just want to, you know, there's another part you have in the book called, well, let me, wait, because I'm hogging you. Will, you have anything you want to ask?
No. Keep going. I'm loving this.
I have no problem. there's another part in the book, and it's called Don't Fear Death. This is important to me. You know, this the whole book is delightful, but this is an example of what I think I'm hearing you saying, that this is important to me to have something other than my own thoughts to reflect on. And you know, to write about. And I read this first part, and I just want to share it to everyone. My stepfather, I hope you don't mind, because I'm going to read it anyway.
Nope.
My stepfather passed in January 3rd, 2021. Man, seems like it was just yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was the closest experience I have ever had with death. When I say close, I literally watched him within a week's time slowly make his transition. My mom and I would go visit him at hospice, and 2 days before he passed, he told me, without using words, I love that, Kelly, you know, not to bring my mom back there. He knew he was ready for transition. We were not, but he was. When I read that, and I'm pretty sure Will knows where I'm going with this, it took me right to where my brother was the last time I had dialogue or talked with him. And Will was there as well. Mick was near the end, and he was not really able to function very well. And he needed help to do everything. And Will had helped him upstairs to his bedroom. And we were about to leave, me and him and Will's mom. And he sent one of his daughters down to retrieve me. My brother never does that. He never did that. You know, we were leaving. It was done. But he asked her to come get me because he wanted to talk to me. He never does that. Never did that. Mm-hmm. Even in his healthier days, he never did that. You know, so I went up. And it wasn't even anything. That's why I love this, what you said. You know, he told me without words not to bring mom back there. Man, you know, so I was sitting by his bedside. And I was just instinctively rubbing his head, which, you know, I never did really. And he looked at me and said, "You were such a sweet boy." You didn't have to know my brother to know that's not the words that would come out of his mouth. And we spent maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and he was just saying things like that as best I could understand him. And, you know, then I left. But I knew that he was saying goodbye. You know, there was, and I even mentioned to Will and Will's mom, that I know that that's what he was doing. So when I read this, it touched me deeply, not just for that reason, but it also is a reality for me. I mean, 75 years old, you know, more so now than ever before, I feel like, you know, I'm on the shady side of the hill. And I'm finding that this time of grace that I've been given is allowing me to move out of a place of fear and into a place not just of acceptance, you know, but peace. And I'm really loving how it's unfolding. And I tell you, just reading your writing, by the way, you're an excellent writer, you know, just reading. And I know this chapter is just, you know, 2.5 pages, but it could be 2.5 volumes as far as I'm concerned, because it's so much, not just in your words, not just in your experience, but the references you use with scripture you know, just, you know, really touches me deeply. You know, and I think for anyone listening right now, the real benefit, the real gift, you know, of taking a chance and reading something that maybe one wouldn't ordinarily read is if you're drawn to it, there's no question in my mind it's going to be just what you're looking for. You know, you really are a gifted writer, you know, and I could say that before I read anything because that's what a person's supposed to say. You know, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't know. But then to actually see that I wasn't lying, you know.
Yes. So,
you know,
yes.
Yeah, you truly are. So this Friday, do you have something happening in this area?
Yes.
In the Texas area?
Yes, I am in your neck of the woods. I am probably 50 minutes from you, and I am having a book signing here in Keller, Texas, Friday evening at about 6 o'clock. It's actually a book release party. It's a party. It's a celebration of something wonderful, and I think it's a different kind of spin on a book signing. It's not very library-esque, I should say. There's music and food and, you know me, if I'm there, it's going to be a couple of games, but I think it's also a very impactful evening because I can say I do a very good job of incorporating aspects of the book and just helping people become more aware of their challenges and their ability to overcome them when it comes to fear. So I think it's going to be a really great time. Yep, and people can still come. They can get tickets on Eventbrite.com. The name of the event is the Fearless Book Release Party, or they can go to www.thefearlessone.com to purchase tickets. The ticket price does include your book and your journal and a couple of other nice things in their swag bags. So, yeah.
Okay, and just to repeat it again, because I didn't write it down, I don't think. We were ready to write it down. Shame, shame, shame. So at the,
no, it's okay. It's Friday,
the
August
purchase.
12th.
Right. Okay. Friday, 6 o'clock, August 12th. Keller, Texas,
yes.
Right?
Keller, Texas, on www.eventbrite.com. The name of the event is the Fearless Book Release Party. I called it a party. Or they can go to my website personally to grab a ticket, and that website is www.thefearlessone.com.
The Fearless One. Okay.
You almost made me cry there. I'm glad we wrapped that chapter up. It's still a very sensitive spot for me.
How could it not be? Yeah. Yeah, how could it not be? You know, and
you've
even
never
just there.
Yeah, you've never shared that story with me about your brother.
Reading this brought it back up for me. I mean, Will and I have talked about it, you know, ad nauseum. We've gone through it frontwards and backwards. I've shared it with Mick's, you know, family. You know, his son, you know, nephew Ray that I live with, and of course with Brenda, you know, Belinda was there, Will's mom. So, you know, within that circle, oh, yeah. But, no, it was reading the book just brought it back to life for me, and you're right. I hadn't, you know, and I don't know why. It wasn't like I was, you know, thinking it was private. It was just, you know, not something that, oh, hey, guess what? You know, I was talking to my brother, you know, the week before he died. You know, it's like, oh, okay, Bill, well. You know, look, man, I got to run right now, and I hope you can catch me up on that later. People tend to balk at conversations about death. At least that's been my experience. I don't know, Kel, you know, or Will. I don't know if you two have found that to be true. You know, but it's not a soup conversation for most. You know, and so you know, so I think just by not having the outlet of dialogue, I think that. In itself can promote a feeling of fear just to be alone with it and, you know, and that doubtful sense takes over. But anyway, you know, I'm looking forward to Friday. I don't know if I'll be able to round anybody up. I'm plugging away, But I know one person is going to be there, you know.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see you.
Same here.
I cannot wait to see you. And yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to the Greenhouse Tech.
Thank you for coming on in such a short notice on top of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are you kidding?
You know, man, I mean, you've made our show.
It's great. I do catch you guys from time to time, and I love listening to y'all talk to one another. I think it's just the greatest concept of a show, and I was like, wow, who came up with this idea? But I do, when I do.
Wilfredo did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will.
Well,
he won't
take full credit for that. You know, really, I think it just kind of evolved into what it is, or I don't know. Maybe I just.
Kelly, I don't know. It was Will's idea.
No. It was both.
It was Will's idea.
It's ingenious to have a father and a son to be able to sit and have a conversation. And debates in such a intellectual and respectful manner as Black men, especially. It just presents a different picture, and I love it. So hats off to you both for running a great show.
Well, thank you, Kel. And again, thanks so much for coming on, and I'll see you Friday, good Lord willing. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Love you both.
Love you
back, Kel.
See ya.
Yay.
Right on.
All righty, Will. So, want to land this airplane?
Man, and for those out there, I'm going to say not only in the Dallas, but it looks like it's also like the Fort Worth area as well. So,
yeah, right
Dallas,
in between,
Fort Worth
really.
Area.
Yeah.
Yeah, right between, man. And, you know, there's, you know, we hear people talk about how other people are, like, their energy is contagious and all this stuff. And a lot of them are like, yeah, whatever. Kelly is contagious, and it's good.
Yeah.
Positive.
Yeah.
It's all that. And really, I think that she was just being real cool, real chill. She was kind of containing
back,
some of that.
Man?
She was real laid back tonight. I see you still there, sis. So I'm just saying, man, if you all are out there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I'm going to post this on my personal page as well as the effects group page, and even on this event page tonight. But, you know, definitely make an effort to go see her, get some of that contagion, get some of that energy towards being fearless and check her out. But I will be posting all that.
Amen. And I mean, like, we know, you know, the contagious excitement that she brings to dialogue regardless, you know. and trust me, y'all, she is laid back tonight. and you know, like, we could have brought her on easily at 7 and just gone right on through to where we are right now, and y'all wouldn't have missed a beat. It would have just flown by as it did anyway. So it was really, really great, Kel. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah,
and you're absolutely,
absolutely
right, man. Her enthusiasm is contagious. You know, it's kind of, you know, like, it's one of those situations where, you know, if she's leading something, you might come into a room full of strangers, but you're going to leave with a heart full of friends. You can believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
All right,
man. Make me wish I can get to Dallas a little earlier. But
I heard that, man. If it was a week late, well, no, it had to be 2 weeks later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been here. Yeah. Right on, man. All right. Adam,
so,
I see you out there, man. I just want to apologize again for not being able to. We are apologizing to you for not, you know, bringing you in for the dialogue. But next Monday, we're going to dedicate some time to you, man.
Hey, and let me say also, actually, Adam has sent me a message. And for those of you who were trying to access the chat room, it looks like we had a little problem with the chat room access.
I didn't know
Okay. So for those of you who was listening tonight, who was online, who couldn't get in, it wasn't you. I think that we just had some tech issues with the site tonight. So if you did have some problems accessing the online link, just a heads up, and we apologize for that. But again, we thank you for your support, and we hope to hear you all Monday, 7 p.m.
Right on. I didn't even notice he wasn't in the chat room, man. That's how that's how enthralled I was listening to Kel tonight, man. All righty, Will.
There you go, enthralled. Remember we were talking, ladies and gentlemen, that vocabulary, enthralled.
Yeah, man. So I'm going to get out the way, man, so you can land this airplane. I love you, son.
I love you, too,
love you, Kel. Love you, Adam. Yeah, man, thank you. Thank you all. For...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, that was it. I was going to leave with the quote in regards to the picture, but we didn't get into the graphic for tonight, so we'll save that for Monday. Cause I think we'll
yeah, and I didn't get into the story either, so that's cool. We'll save that for Monday, yeah.
So we'll touch a little bit on mentoring, and maybe we'll touch on the next topic of the personal program.
Yeah, and mentoring also has another element we'll talk about Monday having to do with sponsorship. You know, very closely related, but I think important to separate the two.
Okay. All right. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, we're live on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect, the letter FX. Again, if you missed any episodes, want to catch up on what you missed, all shows are saved on the website as well as your favorite podcast listening platform. Here at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, we try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe an even deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. Again, a special shout-out to Kelly tonight, Kelly Roberson. Thank you so much for coming in. Definitely for those of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please take some time to go get some of that contagion from her book. As always, Dan, and I hope that you all be safe, be blessed, and most importantly, be yourself, because everybody else is taken. Awesome show tonight, Dad. As always,
yeah,
man,
Will.
Love you.
Love you back.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good night. We'll talk to you all Monday. Amen.
Amen.
Feeling this way, I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you'll stay to be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain,